Hey guys, and thanks so much for tuning in to the Original Strength Podcast. Got a very special show for you today because my friend and mentor, Mr. John Brookfield, is on the show. And John, welcome to the OS Podcast.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So if you don't know, John Brookfield is, well, he's an amazing man. I call him the modern day Samson. Not only is he the creator and father of the battling ropes, he has also invented Brookfield's barrel training, which is to me one of the most amazing strength training systems ever. And he is also really, for me, like I said, he's my mentor, but he's almost like, he's pretty much a spiritual father to me. He's taught me so much about faith, about strength training, about God, about character, about just personal growth and development. I can't say enough good things about John. I'm quite certain that he is everything responsible for anything I've done, book-wise, teaching-wise. He's the foundation. And I've heard often that you stand on the shoulder of giants. Well, this is the giant that I've been standing on for the last 10 years. So I'm really excited to have him on the show. John, I got a question for you.
Well, first of all, that guy sounds you're talking about sounds pretty impressive. I'd like to meet him someday.
Every day you look in the mirror. I can't say enough good things about John. He means the world to me. But John is, if you don't know, he is a modern day Samson. John, were you once a traveling performing strongman? Can you tell everyone about what you used to do?
Well, my background with the strongman, when I was 18 years old, 17 or 18, I was in Greenfield, Indiana. There was actually a gentleman about 82 years old, worked in a hardware store. I was a high school football player. He was like 82 years old, and I saw him bend some 60-penny nails, which is a nail about the size of a pencil. And kind of right then, that really kind of gave me that bug with the strongman stuff. So I started trying to dab with strongman stuff and was starting to develop it at a pretty early age. But yeah, did professional strongman stuff for many, many years.
So you have, how many world records do you have?
I'm not really sure. I would think, and some of them were Guinness records. I think maybe actually around 20.
20.
Years ago, I used to do like kind of, you know, like things like even like on the leg extension bench. Remember, you don't even see those much anymore. I would do like I had 220 pounds, and I would do 12 reps every minute for 2 hours. I did some stuff like that. I started with that kind of endurance.
What are some other world records or Guinness records that you have currently?
The ones that most people know about the most is tearing decks of cards. I tore 100 decks of cards in 2 minutes and 15 seconds for today's show. And then I tore 60 decks, I think, in 61 seconds for decks of cards. And also I bent 50 pounds of 60-penny nails. If you go to the hardware store, you can get a 50-pound box of 60-penny nails. And I bent, I think it was 525 in the box, and I bent them back to back.
Wow. What you have a world record for a truck pull.
And that's actually my favorite record is the truck pulling.
Tell me about it.
And let's see, we did it several times. We've pulled a mile, and I think we probably done it 10 or 12 times. I did 1 mile by myself. But when we did the record a few years back, Kirk Nobles and myself, we pulled a 40,000-pound tractor trailer a mile, with the last about quarter mile being uphill. And we did that. We did that record, and then Men's Health Magazine did an article on it. And then Duke University came and actually did like a testing on me.
Wow. How fast did you do it?
That time, I think we did it in an hour and 11 minutes. But what got interesting, Kirk called me back. This was like 3 years ago. I was 58, and he was like about maybe 64. And he said, I want to beat that record in less than an hour. So we had the same truck, 40,000 pounds, the exact same route again. Last quarter mile was uphill, and we pulled it in 50 minutes and 54 seconds.
Wow.
That day. God was definitely with us.
40,000-pound truck in 50 minutes?
50 minutes and 54 seconds. And it was actually, when Kirk called me, I didn't really care either way. I said, I didn't really want to do it, but I said, I'll do it. So I trained for it, I think about maybe 5 weeks. And basically we blew the record away, but it was all God.
So, like I mentioned earlier, John is the father of the battling ropes training system. So if you've ever seen anyone ever exercise with a rope, John's the reason why. As a matter of fact, in the new documentary about nutrition, The Game Changer, about being vegan, the gentleman hosting that show, he did it for 20 minutes. Or maybe, I don't know, he may have done an hour, but I know he was all excited about how long he did the ropes. How long have you done battling ropes, velocity waves?
Thinking back, when I first was creating the system, every exercise with the ropes, even seated, I did an hour or more just kind of researching it. But I think one day, just basically, I think I did about 8 hours one time, just for my own fun
eight,
and record.
8 hours. About how many waves per minute? Because you're pretty consistent.
Probably about 100.
100 waves a minute per 8 hours. If you have never laid hands on a rope, that's kind of hard to wrap your head around. However, those of you that have ever created waves down a rope for exercise, you probably know that 100 waves in a minute is about all you want for 1 minute. But John did it for 8 hours.
And the system actually teaches people, I mean, you can use it for intervals, anything what way you want, I mean, which people do, adults for adults, but the system actually teaches people how to sustain over long periods of time and relax under distress, which is crucial. So when you use that system, basically it transfers into real life.
So he said relax under stress or distress. Mm-hmm. I want to get back to that in a second, but before I do, how did you create the battling ropes, or why did you create battling ropes?
Oh, that's a good question, Tim. Actually, when I was doing the truck pulling records, I was looking for a way to actually be able to sustain strength and endurance over time. And if you look at people's background and research, there's really nothing on that. They say you can't, basically, without the rest. But I knew there was. So I just seek God. I was looking for a system. I asked the Lord if he would reveal to me. I used the word reveal to a system or training method that would actually help people sustain physically and mentally over time. And I can honestly say that I felt the Lord real strong, my spirit say, I'll show you, but no one else has ever asked that question before. And so within about an hour, he actually took me to the flow of water, to like a fast-moving stream or river, and also like waves of a hurricane wave. And so with that being said, I started mimicking the flow of water with the ropes.
What made you decide to pick up a rope to do that, though? Like, that is so amazing to me.
Well, I was thinking when he was showing me the the waves, I guess he revealed that to me in the spirit. But the only way I could think about to actually do that is with a rope. Because you can create like a long, like almost like a tsunami or tidal wave rope, like one long one, like a hurricane wave, or like a real fast series of waves like you would with a river or a stream.
So if you didn't catch this, the entire world knows how to exercise with ropes, because John was trying to figure out how to improve his work capacity to pull a 40,000-pound truck. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
So it's work capacity. So if you think with the truck pull, obviously the waves with the rope are moving quite quickly, or they should be. With the truck pull, you're moving quite slow. But even though the truck pull, you're inching along, your body is actually moving quite fast with explosive power. You know, with that inertia, even though the truck's barely moving, you're still putting out a lot of really fast force, even though it doesn't look like it.
Absolutely. So we mentioned work capacity. To me, you are the father of work capacity. There is no other expert. A lot of people are talking about work capacity, but I'm not sure they understand work capacity. Can you explain what work capacity is?
Well, I mean, people say things differently, but non-scientifically, it's just ability to sustain over time for discomfort, basically. So if you can relax under the distress, it's not uncomfortable anymore. If you look at training techniques, if you can combine maybe athleticism with the way somebody would work out in the farm or construction site, you're combining that ability. Hey, like a construction worker, somebody working on the farm, it might be 100 degrees. They get up and start at 7, and they mentally know, hey, I'm going to start at 7. I'm going to be out here for 10 or 12 hours. So they fix their GPS, you know, just to actually sustain that over time. So use that kind of mental capacity, and then you get more specific with your training.
Okay.
But the goal is just to be able to relax under time, say, hey, I know I'm going to be doing this for so long. Let's say you're going to do the ropes for an exercise for an hour. I'm going to be out here for an hour. I don't know how hard it's going to be, how easy it's going to be, but I'm just going to relax and sustain it and just stay on task.
So relaxing under stress and making hard things easy is part of work capacity, being able to endure, mm-hmm. like not just a workout for an hour, but the next 8 hours of the day or the next 10 hours of the day.
Exactly. So like when I would do my workouts normally, and I still do, I will go maybe 70 minutes and I'll use the same exercise for 70 minutes. Now I do vary it from day to day, but for example, when I was first starting doing that, I would take a drill that I might have a hard time doing for 45 seconds, but then I taught myself how to do it for a whole hour, sustain that over time. So you kind of mentally just teach yourself to do that. Your body will adapt to it.
The body, because the mind's going that way.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I'll say, Tim, you know, it's important. It's very, very important. I'm not against circuits, rounds, and intervals. I like those. We know that they're motivating. They burn fat. We know that. But the problem, there's two problems when you do always circuits, rounds, and intervals. You're missing two main components, which will transfer into real life. So let's say, for example, and you can pick any exercise. Let's pick three. Let's say you're going to do 40 seconds of kettlebell swings, 40 seconds of push-ups, and 40 seconds of maybe box jumps, okay?
Okay.
So you do 40 seconds. Before that kettlebell swing gets really, really hard, you get to let yourself off the hook before it really starts to work on your mind and body, and you get to go do something else. So you're constantly changing. So you're letting, even though you're getting very, very fit, you're letting yourself off the hook every time where you need to sustain over time.
And mentally, you know, you've got a break coming up within 10 seconds after you get started. That one's coming up in 30.
It'd be like a hot day. It was 110 degrees and you're out mowing the lawn for four hours. And every 15 minutes you come inside and get lemonade, which there's nothing wrong with that. But so you're not actually sustaining and teaching yourself how to sustain.
So when I first met you, maybe a couple of years after I met you, you went through a season of where you would train with hourglasses. What? And you had a reason for it. Can you share why you would train with hourglasses?
I almost forgot that, but yeah, I would use hourglasses. I have an hourglass at home. I think it took about 52 minutes for the sand to come out. So I would put when we're watching the clock, it's easier that way because you know, hey, I'm going to have to go so long I can sustain it. But with the hourglass, you even though the sand, it took 52 minutes, you can't tell how much sand's in that hourglass.
So it was mentally deceptive. Yeah. It was almost like a mental torture thing.
You couldn't tell because if somebody, let's say you take someone that's even out of shape, just pick somebody that's really out of bad shape, but they're fairly determined. If you put them on a drill for 2 minutes, if they know they only have to last 2 minutes, they're probably going to make it if they're determined because they can kind of watch the clock. Oh, I'm only have to do this for 2 minutes, but if they don't know how long it's going to last, you know what I mean? It may last 2 minutes. It may last 5 hours. That's where you really have to teach yourself how to relax.
So, funny story. John had his battling rope certification, but he also had a level 2 certification. And I went to John's house to complete my level 2 certification. And I knew exactly how to tell time based on how many waves I was. So if I did 100 waves, that was a minute. If I did 200 waves, I had gone 2 minutes. So I would count my waves to know the certification to pass was 10 minutes of waves at, what was it, 100, 110 waves?
Yeah, I think we used 110, I think.
Yeah, so I knew how to tell time by counting my waves. I had practiced and trained to sustain my waves. John warned me not to use a synthetic fiber rope because they were lighter than his natural Manila rope. And I was like, whatever, rope's a rope. I was wrong. But I knew how to tell time by how many waves I was doing in a minute. So I knew how to count my waves and I knew how long I would go. But just in case, I also put a vibrating gym fit boss on my waist that would vibrate every minute too. So I would know how long I was going.
And I didn't know that.
John didn't know that.
Until now.
Exactly. I didn't tell you. But John would stand there and count my waves and he held a clock that he was watching the minute hand go around on. But John would talk to me. I'm still counting though, because I'm not gonna be sidetracked. I was counting my waves and I was counting my vibrating gym boss. When I was certain that I was at 10 minutes, John told me, no, I had about two more to go. So that's my funny, torturous story. So I actually think I did it more than the required 10. But John is the master also, not only of work capacity, but mental strength and tenacity. That's because, for example, John invented a way of training called the weight of water. John, can you tell us what the weight of water is?
The weight of water, it's an entire system, but kind of break it down basically, it would be, let's use the push-up, for example. You know, you get in a push-up position, you have 2 5-gallon buckets of water. One on the right would be full of the water. The one on the left would have no water. And you'd have like a little cup, maybe like a shot glass or even smaller.
1 ounce.
Yeah, and so basically you would have to transfer the water from one bucket to the other by staying in that push-up position. And the cool thing about it works your mind and body, you know, and it even gets cardiovascular. But the cool thing about it is you can probably move 30 little cups of water and the water level hasn't even went down. So you can't see the water level going down. So just like with real life, you're working on something. Sometimes it looks like nothing's happening. And it gets very, very mentally tiring if you let it. But you need to stay on task. But you know over time it's actually going to move that water and you transfer it. So it teaches the person to stay on task when they can't see what's happening.
How long would it take to empty a 5-gallon bucket full of water with a 1-ounce cup?
It basically would take me, when I did it, staying on task, usually around 42 minutes.
42 minutes in a push-up position.
About 42 minutes.
Wow.
And also, when I had people come and I would show them that, I would just, you know, put them briefly on it. But one guy came from New York. He wasn't an athlete. He was actually a logger up around the Canadian border. And he said, "John, do you mind if I try to move all the water, you know, from one to the other?" And I said, "I'll just sit down and relax." And he actually moved it all from one to the other.
Wow. That's impressive. If you've never tried the weight of water, get you two buckets, fill one of them up with water, and hold a push-up position and try to transfer the water from one bucket all the way to the other bucket. Use a 1 ounce cup if you do not like yourself, but if you like yourself, use an 8 ounce coffee cup. Either way.
Or a thimble.
Or a thimble if you really don't like yourself. So John, you're pretty much, to me, the father of work capacity, of mental resilience training. You are the example of faith, how to keep going when you don't know what's coming up next, how to get comfortable being uncomfortable. So to me, that would make you an expert in fitness also for training, physical preparedness training, physical resilience training. Who would be the most fit person in the world? Like, you got all these athletes and you got all these vocations and stuff. Who do you think would be the most fit person?
That's a good question. I'm glad you asked me. Several people have asked me that question. My thought, and I'll give you three examples. Somebody might think, well, is it the Ironman triathlon champion, or is it, you know, a CrossFit champion that stands on the stage, or the Olympic gold medalist in the decathlon? But we don't know who the fittest person in the world is. But I would say they would have to be at least 80 years old, and that's going to surprise you. But why am I saying 80? Because we're talking about longevity. So who could sustain over a long period of time? If someone's 80 years old and they're very, very fit and mobile and can still do good workouts, they would be the fittest, because it's long-term in life. We want to stay mobile and fit and strong as long as we possibly can. It's longevity.
So it's not the young person's sport or whatever they're doing at that time. It's how long their body will last, and how capable are they as their body lasts.
Exactly, because that person's studying the best example. And hopefully some of the people we mentioned, like, you know, in the CrossFit winner's circle or the gold medalist in the Olympics or the triathletes, hopefully they'll be fit when they're 70 or 80 or 90. But we don't know that. A lot of times they get beat up really, really bad.
I often wonder that, because it looks like a lot of abuse for a short season in their life.
Yeah.
Like, I have not seen a lot of 60-year-old or 70-year-old cross. I'm not saying there aren't any. I just haven't seen a lot of 60 or 70-year-old CrossFitters.
Well, and I'll use that made me think of something else, not to change the subject, but like Olympic weightlifting, you know, whether if you're a fan of the sport or not. I know a lot of the top Olympic weightlifters, even some of the ones from Russia that were gold medalists. And I can't think of any world-class Olympic weightlifter as they get old that's just not completely almost crippled. I mean, the ones that I know of, and you can study some of the, you know, the European great Olympic lifters. You know, if you like the sport, that's great. But most of them are just completely just annihilated as they get older in the joints and stuff.
Is it? Do you think it's too much force on the body, or?
I would assume so. I don't really know. It's probably a combination of that and not taking care of themselves. So basically, you know, we want to stay strong and mobile over time so we can be productive and fulfill the destiny God has for us.
Okay.
So it's fine to train hard, because I've been very, very bad about overtraining myself. But then I learn, hey, yeah, we're talking about longevity here. You know, we got to take care of ourselves in every way.
Is there a chance that doing velocity for 8 hours was overtraining, or was that just for the sake of learning?
I don't think so much for velocity, because the velocity they've actually, the research in kinesiology actually found that it moves lactic acid and filters the body. But so it's pretty painless on the joints, because if you look at the battling ropes, you're completely piloting the plane. In other words, if we have a kettlebell or a weight, it can impose its will back on us.
Okay.
But the rope can't. Let's say if someone's got bad shoulders, they can only put as much force in that rope as their body's going to allow. That rope can't impose any pressure back on them.
That's interesting. That's a good point, too.
Yeah.
There is a low learning curve and barrier. There's no barrier to entry for the ropes.
As far as I know, I've not ever heard of anybody ever getting injured on the ropes. And I know a lot of world-class physical therapy guys, even like Davis Coe, he's in California, actually uses the ropes to rehab people's shoulders after rotator cuff surgery.
Wow. Okay.
That's not my forte, but he does that. Yeah.
Awesome. So we talked about the most fit person. So it seems like, though, being fit, if the definition is would be somebody in their 80s that's still strong and able and mobile, there also seems like there would be some type of wisdom that would accompany somebody that makes it that long. Like, I don't know that that would all necessarily be an accident. You have to have some kind of wisdom. So who would be the wisest or the smartest person then, smartest athlete?
Well, I'll give you kind of a long story short. Like, if you use Caleb in the Bible, a lot of people know who Caleb was, but when Moses was leading the children, the Israelites across the desert, Caleb went in, they were in the desert for over 40 years, and Caleb went in at a little over 40 and came out at 85. And basically at 85, he said he was just as strong, as fit and capable as he went in. But she asked, well, how did he sustain that? Basically, the Bible said very, very clearly, he looked at God wholeheartedly the whole time. And you have to remember at that time, you know, the example with Caleb too, God showing you will fulfill your destiny if you look to God at all times, because there was 600,000 grumblers for 40 years in the desert. Think about that. 600,000 people with bad attitudes around Caleb. But yes, Caleb still fulfilled his destiny because the Bible says he looked to God wholeheartedly.
So he stayed focused and kept the main thing the main thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome.
So that's also the key to strength and just mental capacity, is have your focus on the right thing, which is God.
Trusting in more than just yourself.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
This is good stuff to me. I hope you guys are enjoying. So John has just, well, you have a book coming out, what? Today is April 30th. John's got a book coming out on May 15th called Renew Your Youth, God's Way. Can you tell us about what's your book? What does it mean to renew your youth God's way? What's in your
book? Renew Your Youth God's Way, basically, about 5 or 6 years ago, I was seeking God. If you look at once you make Jesus Lord and Savior, your list of benefits is in Psalms 103. And the last benefit God says, and a lot of times there's songs about this, he renews your youth like the eagles. So God says, once you trust in him, he will renew your youth like the eagles. And, you know, there's no pastors have really touched on that much. So I really seek God in the Bible and scriptures and also just in prayer. And he started to show me a lot of stuff about longevity and how that works. So the whole book basically is focused in stepping into your destiny. And there's so much in the Bible about health in there, people just don't see it. Like, there's a chapter called Strength of Your Bones. There's a tremendous amount in the Bible about how to strengthen and keep your bones healthy. There's a chapter about sleep. There's a lot in the Bible about sleep, about sleeping well, and just health to your flesh. So it's a book that actually will renew you spiritually, mentally, and physically, and help you fulfill your destiny. It's not actually a training book, but there's many, many, many golden nuggets in there for health and longevity.
Okay.
That people's not aware of. There's one chapter called The Long Life and Length of Days. So like we said, the goal is basically longevity and health over time. So there's a chapter about that. There's a lot in the Bible about longevity and staying healthy for the long run. And also how to, you know, like renewing and strengthening your feet, your foundation, girding your loins, which is your core and your middle there.
So it's a holistic approach. So it's a whole body, like you're mentioning, sleep, movement, feet. Do you go over shoes or?
Lack thereof.
Okay.
I do mention shoes, but you know, if you look at just very quickly, there's a lot of, you know, different things about shoes. But God made the man barefoot, and back in the old days or in other countries, they're either barefoot or they wear thin sandals. Basically, most of the shoes now they're jacked up in the back, which actually puts you on an angle. If you look at it, throws your spine out of line. So basically, it talks about biblically how the foot's made and how to actually renew your feet and keep them strong over time. Because that's huge, huge, huge physically.
You got me curious about the sleep part too. How do you renew your youth with sleep? I mean, I know people need sleep to recover, but is there a certain way you're supposed to sleep? Or
there's a lot of verses about sleep, and the chapter is your sleep shall be sweet. So basically, God promises, you know, once you make Jesus Lord and Savior, your sleep will be sweet. But he says right before that, what keeps it? So when people are anxious or fearful, it robs your sleep.
Okay.
And your sleep is crucial because, you know, most people sleep 8 hours, which is a third of their life.
And you're not supposed to go to bed anxious.
Exactly.
Or nervous. Yeah. Or scared.
Exactly. You just basically enter the rest of the Lord, just relax, because that's wherever the renewing is. Yeah.
All right.
And there's biblical diet in there, the power of the Word of God, a little bit about even like, you know, floors, sitting and ground sleeping.
Ground sleeping.
Yeah.
Like earthing or?
Well, earthing is in there, but if you think of the background, if you look at back in the old days, people used to just sit on the floor, mm-hmm. And most, a lot of countries now, they just sit on the floor, and that keeps your hips very, very mobile. You know, much, much more mobile than sitting, and you know, like the way we do now.
Right.
And then sleeping on the ground, basically, it renews your back, keeps your spine healthy and strong. So basically, so not to sleep on the actual ground. You could sleep on like on a mattress, but you want something very, very firm, you know, basically like a pad. So that actually will renew your back.
Awesome. Yeah. So you said, are there exercise programs in this, or like ways to move in the book as well?
There's not actually exercises, but there is, you know, a lot of stuff about how decompressing your spine, keeping your spine healthy, quite a bit about the feet, like that, how to slowly ease into barefoot training and a functional foot.
Awesome. So have you been working on this book for 5 years?
I wrote about maybe half of it maybe 2 years ago, and then like the last year God revealed to me, I put the rest of it together.
And it comes out May 15th?
Yes, it's actually on Amazon right now for, I guess, for pre-sale, but it'll actually be officially released on the 15th of May.
Awesome. Of all the traveling you've done, what was the most fun performance that you've done? Because I've seen you were on the Smothers Brothers, you were on Regis and Kathy Lee. Like, what was the most fun thing you've done?
Boy, it's a tough question. I think probably actually those truck pulls are the funnest.
Yeah?
Yeah, probably just doing those truck pulls.
See, I was with you on one of those truck pulls, and it didn't look like a lot of fun.
Duke University came out, and actually, I don't remember what it was called, but they put a heart rate monitor on me and like a muscle activation, and they put a little thing in my shoe. It was from Nike, about the size of a Band-Aid, and it showed how much force I put in the ground each time.
Do you remember how much that was?
I really don't. I mean, you know, he just said it was a lot, because he did tell me I was what? That particular, I think I was 58 on that particular truck pull. And he did, though, there was three doctors from Duke University came down and did the testing. He did say my numbers were pretty much better than anybody else he's ever seen, even though I was, you know, in my 50s.
So I was actually there at that truck pull, and I specifically remember John and Kurt they had taken like a 15-second break to stand up and stretch their back. And then it was ready to go again. So John leans down, Kurt leans down, and they are digging into the ground. And their feet are moving, and they're you can now, but the truck's not moving. And then I see John like almost like a bull, just really like dig into the ground, and the truck's not moving. And then I hear the truck driver had been not paying attention. And he had the air brake on.
Yeah.
And as soon as he released the air brake, the truck started moving.
Because we had a driver in there with the engine off, of course, just to be able to steer. We had curbs and stuff. But yeah, and just he had his foot supposedly off the brakes. But that one particular time, I guess he kind of went into
his foot was off the brake. But he had the air brake in place.
Exactly. And of course, the last quarter mile was uphill too. So you want to try, because when we stopped and took breaks, but the time still rolled. So, but that last quarter mile is uphill, so you try not to stop anymore than you have to. Because if you stop on an upgrade, it's pretty tough to get it going, which we did a few times, but it's tough.
So, one thing I want to ask you too, a couple years ago, and I think you still do it, and you were just talking about you saw someone else doing it, you would carry a cross down the highway or alongside the highway. How heavy was the cross you were carrying?
I've got different ones, but the biggest one's right around 200 pounds.
How long have you carried the 200-pound cross on your shoulders?
I would usually go out for several hours. There was a lot of people that wheeled the cross, and I greatly appreciate it, because the main thing is a testimony for Jesus. But about maybe a few years back, God says, he says in his word to give him the first fruits. He said, give me the first fruits of everything. And he said, so I gave him the first fruits of my physical strength and energy, because I do like a lot of training. So the main thing in carrying the cross is the message for Jesus. Please don't get me wrong, but also I got my workouts with it. So instead of wheeling it, I would actually physically carry it. I would carry it in three positions, like one, like a half press like this, for as long as I could. Then I would go shoulder to shoulder. But I never set the cross down. I would go miles and miles like that.
So carries are one of the greatest ways to train. They make everything strong. But John went for miles and miles, hours, carrying a 200-pound cross without setting it down. And that's a true loaded carry.
And it's much different than like a backpack or rucksack.
Right.
I mean, because those are perfectly balanced. This, we had to, it's almost like the ultimate thing on your core, because you're yoked this way to the side, and once this area gets tired, you go from the side to side and that. So it's just an incredible workout. But the main thing, as I said, the ministry for Jesus was just very, very visual. And so I've planned before maybe some much, much longer carries in the future.
Do you have any new things you want to tackle coming up, like carries or records or training modalities you've been playing with or anything?
Well, you know, little by little I've been rehabbing my feet, so I do some barefoot running now, and I usually do barefoot most of the time. I got some very, very thin sandals I wear, just flat sandals like for hiking or, you know, rock, stuff like that. But I like the barefoot running and just kind of rehabbing the feet and the hips. Because the goal I really found, Tim, I mean, there's so many different ways to strengthen your core and stuff. But the thing about it is there's more nerves, and as you well know, there's more nerves in your feet than anywhere else in the body. And they're like a control panel, and they tell the body how to fire. You know, so a lot of times, like myself, I found when my feet were quite strong and my hips were quite strong, but they weren't working real well together, like I was telling you. So when I started doing like balancing and, you know, slack lining and stuff like that, instability balancing, I felt like it's almost like my feet and my hips were not working together, but that almost reunited them. Like, hey, nice to meet you again, you know. So the hips and the feet were working very well in unison with that kind of balancing stuff.
Right on. So if you don't know, the palms of your hand and the palms of your feet or the soles of your feet have mechanoreceptors in them. And those receptors give your brain information and help your muscles reflexively fire based off of the pressure that they feel going into the sole or the palm.
And one thing I'll share just kind of briefly, but, you know, I'll do like a lot of stone. I'll take like a bunch of like creek stones, almost the size. You've probably seen like the little creek stones. Almost the size of like a golf ball or smaller. They're not round, but they're kind of, you know, egg-like. Mm-hmm. And I'll put a bunch of those in the ground, and I'll actually work out maybe with those with my bare feet. And it's very, very interesting. I'll do like maybe some squats or kettlebell swings or barrel pushes. Now, it's very, very uncomfortable at first, but see, after a while, I actually found I was stronger standing on those stones than I was flat ground. And what it was because, see, that pressure in my feet was actually activating my whole body and telling my body when and how to fire properly.
That's awesome.
And I've never actually trained anybody else that or ever showed anybody. I've never seen anybody ever do that. But, you know, God kind of showed me to that, so I used that mentality. But I found actually, like, with heavier weight, once I got used to it, I could lift more weight and stabilize better on those stones than I could flat ground because my feet were communicating once again with the rest of my body much, much better, if that makes sense.
That does. And that also runs along the line of what earthing helps the body too.
Yeah, and earthing is a chapter in the Bible. Most people don't know about that, but I'll share three things about the barefoot thing that's very, very healthy. Earthing is kind of a new name, obviously, but if you look at, I'm not very scientific, but the earth actually has, electrons? Basically, you know, almost like an impulse. And when your bare skin is on the ground, your hands, your feet, it actually goes through your body. And there's a kind of a science now called earthing. They've actually proven it actually strengthens your heart, hormones, takes out inflammation, that type of thing. So there's a chapter on that in the book, Renew Your Youth God's Way. But the three things that's really cool about barefooting, Tim, it does three things. So let's say if we're out walking, you know, in the forest or so, it's making our feet activate, so it's strengthening our feet and our loins, our core, all working. So it's giving us better physical balance, but it's also giving us those electrons, you know, to actually strengthen our body and help us recover. Then the third thing, good dirt is very, very good. The good microorganism, the bacteria are very good for our body. So and that's actually getting on the bottom of our feet too, and I believe making us healthier, helping our immune system, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So those three things are very, very powerful.
So basically what you're saying is if we move naturally in nature, mm-hmm. as we're designed to move with nature together, we're stronger and healthier.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's amazing design.
Yeah. I think God came up with that, Tim. But over time, you have to look at what God did, basically, the basics, and that'll never be improved upon. You know, the Bible says very, very clearly, the wisdom of man is foolishness with God. So we don't ever want to alter what God did. So he made the foot to be flat. If he wanted our heels to be jacked up, right, like shoes are, he would actually put more hide on the back of our heel or more bone there. But there's a reason he made us that way. And one thing I'll say about, you know, and it goes against what most people think, you know, most people wear arch supports. And what does an arch support do? It does exactly what it says. It supports. So basically your feet, your arch will come back like very, very powerful springs. But if they're supported all the time, they get lazy because they don't have to work. We like if there was 10 of us and went out and worked on a construction site, comparison two of us, if there's 10 specialists out there instead of two, what's going to happen?
You need to take a break.
Yeah, they're probably not going to work. They're going to
not have to work as hard.
Yeah. I've actually built my arches up twice. And you'll say, well, how did I do it twice? How did they fall? I was working like a DOT contract job, and I had to wear kind of big clunky boots. And my feet actually got weak in those. And as soon as I got out of them again, my arch actually come right back up. And your arches are so important because your arches will support your back and your hips.
Yes.
And your entire spine. But it does take a little time to rehab your feet, guys. And I talk about that in your book. You can't do it right away. If you start trying to get into stuff real quick like that, running and stuff, you're probably going to maybe have problems with your Achilles or your big toe. So you have to kind of ease into it. But I do talk about that a lot in the book.
Awesome.
But it's more than worth the time to rehab your feet.
I agree. I think it's more than worth any amount of time to honor your body's design and start moving and living the way you were designed to, for sure.
And Tim, you asked me a question earlier, and for some reason I didn't answer you. I'd like to answer that. You said, who's the smartest person?
Yeah.
Other than, I'm just kidding, not me, obviously. But the smartest person, that's a good question. But we don't know who the smartest person was. The Bible obviously said Solomon was, but the smartest people, I said probably the Apostle Paul was the smartest, and God says, well, Solomon was. But the Apostle Paul, for example, or the apostles, I don't know how smart they were with bookwork, but they were smart enough to see, hey, they needed to serve God, basically, and fulfill their destiny. So I say the people that fulfill their destiny, you know, and look to Jesus and seek him to fulfill that destiny, that they're the smartest.
So here's a closing question. How do you, if a person is supposed to be to fulfill their destiny, do we all have a destiny?
We all have a destiny, and I'll share this with you. So, you know, once we make Jesus Lord and Savior, God created us, each one of us, with a very, very powerful destiny. And I'll use Moses, for example. And Tim and Moses. Okay, Moses did great things Tim never could or never will. Okay, Moses did great things Tim Anderson never could or never will. But Tim Anderson has done things that will do things that Moses never could or never will. Because God creates each one of us very, very special. And each one of our destiny is very, very powerful, just as powerful as the other. So once you make Jesus Lord and Savior, you know, I strongly suggest to ask him what your destiny is and tell him you want to fulfill it. Because people ask me, what's the greatest accomplishment ever? You know, people say, well, some people want $1 billion in the bank or maybe Olympic gold medal or the Medal of Honor, you know, something like that. But the greatest accomplishment we can ever have is when we die or Jesus comes back, hear the words, well done, good and faithful servant. That's the greatest honor, greatest accomplishment ever.
Awesome. So that's a great place to end, asking what your destiny is and wanting to fulfill it.
And one other thing, if I may, there's quite a few places in the Bible where God actually talks about, he wrote things about in the books. But if you look to Psalms 139, verse 16, it's a very, very simple scripture. Psalms 139, verse 16, it says, in God's book, he wrote your destiny, the days fashioned to you. In other words, your exact destiny. So I strongly suggest you ask him what's in that book, what that destiny is.
But right before that, he also says, I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. John Brookfield.
Well, thank you, Tim. Because if you ask God and fulfill what's in that book that he wrote about you, you will hear the words, well done, good and faithful servant.
Right on. Well, thank you, John.
Thank you, Tim.
This is awesome. Thanks for listening, guys. Tune in next week when we have another podcast with whom I do not know. All right, guys. Have a good week.
Hey guys, thanks so much for watching or listening to the Original Strength Podcast.